This is Issues 2024. I'm Steve McIntosh, and our guest is Sedgwick County Manager Tom Stolz. Welcome to Issues 2024, Tom.
Thank you, Steve. Good to be here.
You know, one of the biggest items, I think, on the county's agenda this year, if not the biggest, is that new psychiatric hospital. Give us an update on that. Is the location still undecided?
Well, it's nothing's final yet, but we're the project is moving toward the location at MacArthur and Meridian. The funding is there. We have got work going on, site planning going on. The governor's office has green-lighted that location. I know there's still some discussion within the legislature, but we're not hearing anything to the contrary of moving to that location. So that's the plan going forward.
So you're going forward with the plan. You're saying we're going to do it there unless you hear something different. Huh?
That's pretty much where we're at. Yeah, I mean, we're moving. All lights are green to head to that location. So that's the way we're progressing. There's a little bit of exigency in this whole situation, because I do agree that whenever you do something large in a community, you need to take your time and do it right. And we get criticism a lot with that because government's so slow. But, you know, we're trying to do things right to the right scale in the right location. The problem is there are some federal monies tied up in this project. A good chunk of the construction money is ARPA money, and there are very specific timelines on when ARPA can be spent. So that is kind of a shadow looming over. This makes us hustle a little bit on this project. So we're trying to keep it moving, and that is the plan going forward to get designs and things done post-haste and get some construction going.
When you're dealing with the state of Kansas, and I know that it's a kind of a strange deal. The county, you are pretty much the state conduit on a lot of things.
Yes.
Do we have difficulty with the legislature very often? I mean, not difficulty, but this is kind of a last minute thrown out there. Let's change or let's look at something else. Do you have much of that going on?
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought it up. That is the difference between city governments and county. The counties are a conduit of the state of Kansas on a lot of fronts, in a lot of areas, public health, mental health, the sheriff's office, emergency management, et cetera. And we're like any, I'm sure we're a very typical county, not only comparative in this state, but across the country. We try to maintain, we have 500,000+ people here that we have to answer to and be responsible for, and we fight for them best we can. We have conflict when the state wants to, cast a wide net and we want to take care of Sedgwick County. There's natural conflict that comes from that. And I think that we try for as much local control as we can get. And of course, the state wants to do what's best for the entire state. And that's just a natural setup for conflict. And it's okay. We work through it. Our commissioners are very adept at that. And the staff is very adept at that. And we know the state's trying to do the best they can. So, generally speaking, we get along well. We're just like any other, group that works together. We'll have occasional disagreement and some fights, but we always get over it. Try to be professional both ends of the spectrum, and we try to work through the differences.
The county has a community task force to review youth correction systems. Who serves on the task force like that? How are things progressing on that?
Well, we have a number of advisory boards in the world of corrections, and in the youth task force, there's a couple different venues looking at that. We had a community task force that we mobilized after the Sedgwick Lofton incident at GIAC. And that group has done fantastic work. It was exactly what we were hoping for. That's a terrible tragedy for the community when you have a young person who is in a custody that, is either hurt seriously or in this case, he died. So what we wanted from that blue ribbon just citizen committee was an analysis of STEM to STERN projects and policy. And they came in with a list, dozens of items that made really good sense. We've implemented almost all of them just a few things we're trying to tidy up at the county level to make sure that we can say we have implemented everything that they wanted us to do. We have an item in that the commission just passed a couple of weeks ago regarding sound and video in all of these situations. So a lot of it costs some money, so we had to take it through budget process. But that it's just a group of citizens from various disciplines of life that have some contact or conduit with young people, and they've done a really good job for us under a really tough circumstance. And I applaud the county staff involved in this too, the sheriff, the corrections entity, state of Kansas, DCF. Everyone was at the table because we're all in a business. Let's try to get better. Let's try to get better every day and make sure an incident like this never happens again. And do the best we can. It's hard. It's hard to guarantee that because when you're dealing with people in society, and a lot of times not in the best circumstances of their life, it's tough. But we want to try to make sure that we have the best policy, the best practices going forward, so this doesn't happen again.
So does the county then operate these advisory boards like the city of Wichita then, something similar?
I would think so. I mean, we have over 30 advisory boards in the county, and by and large, they are commission-appointed. Elected officials appoint the boards. There are some that I'll have some appointments on, or county staff has some appointments on, but by and large, they're politically appointed boards. They serve an advisory board, and I think on the city and the county side, serve as a conduit between the elected officials and the general citizenry. It's just one more arm that reaches out to for transparency, for increased communications, so that people can feel like they're engaged in their government.
Do they ever come up with any good ideas?
Oh, all the time. Yeah, I mean, there's a, they come up with things that we would never think of, and we have staff presence in most of these advisory board meetings, and we had really try to coach the staff to listen, but they come up with good ideas, and then they will. If we have an idea, they will love it or hate it, and we work through differences so that we, again, bring the best regulation and the best policy forward. But they're invaluable. They're tough to manage. I mean, it's work, and it takes time, and it takes effort, but it's worth it because without advisory boards, I just think there's too much gap between the commission or the council and the people walking on the street. I just think you got to do the best you can to build those connections. So, they pay off in the long run. They come up with good ideas.
How does one become a member of an advisory board, Tom?
On the county side, I think city has a similar software. In fact, I think we copied their software and implemented on this side a few years ago. But on the county side, you just go to the website, go into the commission office, follow the links, and then there's a list. There's a page or two of advisory boards that has a brief description of what each advisory board does, and it will have, if it's the positions are filled, it is in green, and if it's a vacant position, then it's in red, and you can apply for those vacant positions, and then it comes through the commission office and staff, and the commission ultimately has the authority, and they will. If you watch any commission meeting, every week we almost always have some type of appointment to a board or a resignation or, replacement of board members. And they go through the process, and then they get on the board. And then, some meet monthly, some meet quarterly, some meet ad hoc, and then you just become part of the system and, get your input given so that the commission pays attention to what the advisory boards say. So if you want your voice heard, it's a great way to become involved in government.
Tell us about the county's role in developing housing in the area, which is becoming quite an issue, I think.
Well, up till about 5 years ago, the city of Wichita had a housing department and the county had a housing department. And then back in that time period, we ended up merging the county housing department into the city. And the city's good at it. It's like a park system. The city's really good at running parks. The county, not so much. We only have very few parks. And it was the same way with housing. We had very few housing units, very little business in that regard. So we ended up just consolidating it under the city. The role of this is everybody's. And we have, I think it's been well established and well stated that in this region right now, for how fast we are growing with industry and commerce, that we have a housing shortage. Debatable how much shortage, you know, everything from a few thousand up to several thousand units short. So this now becomes all government discussion. City is the wheelhouse because they run the housing program, but county and the state have to augment, supplement, and support that to the best degree they can. And then our, you know, some, to some degree, private enterprise has to take over too. Private marketing, and you know, I think the builders are out. They're building. There's a lot of development going on around the county. You can drive anywhere and see 30 and 40 rooftops popping up in subdivisions out on the fringes of the county. And there's a lot of action inside the city and a lot of action downtown here where we're creating more housing. So, you know, I don't want to say that it's not the county's wheelhouse, because I think we should be involved and we should support the city and what they're trying to get done here, which is for the betterment of the community. But the housing department is under City of Wichita.
Spring severe weather season is here. Are the county's emergency management people prepared for this?
Oh, we're all. Julie Stimson's always ready, right? I mean, she was in front of commission 2 or 3 weeks ago. We have a really good crew over there. She is fantastic. Her crew is fantastic. And again, you know, severe weather is just like a lot of other problems that we run into in government. It impacts everybody, and we need ground level citizens helping and observing and helping us be safe. So we're ready as you can be in the state of Kansas, right? You just never know what's going to happen. And we always, you know, we talk about a lot when we're doing scenario and mock exercises. And COVID keeps coming up. Well, you know, what if we have this other virus come in? And I keep telling people that's, you know, hopefully once in a lifetime, but F4 and F5 tornadoes are every year. So our chances of having severe storm in this area are a lot greater than some other risks that we face as a society. So we depend on our emergency management people. We depend on our police and fire responders. And I think they are as ready as we can be for hopefully what's a calm season coming up, but you never know.
You're listening to Issues 2024 on the Odyssey radio stations, and our guest is Sedgwick County Manager Tom Stolz. Emergency communications had some problems. Are those questions answered or being answered, Tom?
Well, with 911, let me just state on the front end, they do a job that it's hard to describe. I think that the county historically has misnomered that group into a call center, and that is really not what they are, although that it has a function and an outward appearance of being a call center. I've been comparing them more lately to air traffic controllers, where they are directing traffic of all sorts, EMS, fire, and police all over this community in as fast and efficient a manner as possible. There was always, and I go back to the old days, I mean, I was a police officer in the early 80s, and what we expected from dispatch back in the old days was be fast, I mean, answer the call quickly and get it dispatched quickly and be accurate. Make sure you send us to the best location. And remember, they're talking to people who are also not having the best of their days either. They've been in an accident or they're seeing something traumatic. So sometimes communication is very difficult under those circumstances. Do the best you can and get us there as fast as possible. Well, over the years, that has morphed, and there's a third component now, and that is a triage component where not only do we want you fast and accurate, we want you to send the right number of units, the right type of units, to the call. And so you have to triage the call, talking to a lot of times a very upset and times hysterical person on a phone to triage their exact need in as fast a way as you can, and then dispatch the proper units. And we're always, and I was, as a police officer, we were always critical of 911. Well, you sent the wrong number of units. You should have sent this. You should have sent that. And they're doing the best they can under a really dire circumstance. So what we've been doing in the last couple of years is trying to, we have to recognize as government and as a community that these 911 personnel are a core part of a public safety entity. They kind of You think of core public safety, you think police, fire, EMS. These 911 people are part of this. They're part of the trauma. They feel the trauma when things go not well, and we need to treat them, respect them, and pay them to a level that keeps them here. So the commission has made some significant pay adjustments for call takers and dispatchers there. We have a dispatch director who has unfairly been characterized as mismanaging that department. She is a lifelong dispatcher. This is her livelihood. She knows what she's doing. She also goes back a long way, and she is trying to turn the ship on 911 to a positive direction, more professional. She's creating tiers of dispatching levels. She wants to specify and have specific police, fire, and EMS dispatchers so that they are, it's consistent and they know the role that these guys play and these gals play out there. And those systems have all gotten more complex, too. Fire is much more complex than it was 30 years ago. Police, same way. EMS, way more complex. They're an emergency room in the community driving the streets. So all of this has gotten much more complex, and I think that the criticism that we've heard on dispatch in the last few months is to some degree unwarranted, but we listen, and we're trying to make them better, and we have a director that desperately wants to make them better, and some of it just comes down to communication across the lines of the public safety entity. So we're working. There's a number of things, and we're going to try to be very transparent with the changes that are happening in 911. We're getting ready for budget hearings. There are some. We want to accredit them nationally. We want to do some things that are going to cost a bit of money, but I think that most citizens want the best 911 they can get. So the commission will have to make those decisions when we present it to them in a budget of, what do you want to fund and what can't we fund, and we're going to try to get them, top notch, top of the line.
When do you plan to move to your new administrative offices?
Well, currently we're in the Ruffin building, and the commission have looked at a number of options. Right now we're looking at, are there any existing buildings out there that would work? Should we build a building across from City Hall at 3rd Main? That is one of the viable options we're taking a really hard look at. There's vacant land in between the Epic Center and City Hall. There's a green patch there and a little bit of a parking lot. We throw a small admin building into there, which puts us into proximity into Government Central by the city building and by the federal buildings. Or is there a building somewhere that they can move into? So I don't have a hard and fast answer for you on that yet. The commission hasn't really made a firm decision on that yet, because this is one of those deals, Steve, where it's a huge lift. It's a lot of money, and the commission want to be as right as they can on this. And there is no federal exigency on this. We can take our time and make the right decision, to put this into the best location possible.
My assessed property tax value took a jump this year. What goes into that annual assessment, Tom? How do they figure that?
Well, the appraiser's office, and I'm always amazed. I was just at an event yesterday where I don't think a lot of people understand the property tax bill that they get in the mail. The appraiser works for the state of Kansas. He's an appointed official from Property Value Department. He works here. He works in conjunction with the county. There are county employees there. But he works for the state of Kansas, and his whole goal is to try to create a fair assessment based on comparables in and around the area of homes on what their value is. And he has to be within a 10% plus or minus ratio of accurate costs. So that's his burden. He's trying to formulate that, put out the best fair market assessment on our houses and businesses as he can. So when you get your, and all of our, mine has gone up the same as everybody else's. When you get your property tax bill, you look at it very carefully and you determine, and I think a lot of times it's like, well, this is county taxes. The county are getting all this money. There's school district taxes in there. There are city taxes. We have 28 mills, 28.99 mills of county tax in there, which is actually less than a quarter of the bill that you get in your property tax. So, you know, you're paying everybody. You're paying for public education. You're paying your city streets and police. You're paying your county sheriff and your county EMS and all the functions that the county provides, and a number of other taxing districts as well, as cemeteries, et cetera. There's a lot of taxing entities out there, but the bulk of your property tax bill is school, city, county, and state. So you're paying all levels of government. And I think what upsets people a lot, and we've talked about this, is they get that bill twice a year, and it's just big, and it keeps going up. But the fact is, that's the way property's going right now. Housing is so much more expensive than it was even 5 years ago. And I don't know if that's part of the ripple of COVID or what has happened there, but the housing costs have just gone up tremendously. And you'll feel that on your home insurance as well. You might have insured your home $300,000 worth 5 years ago. Now you're insuring it for $500,000 or $600,000. So you'll feel that across the board. And it upsets people, rightfully so, but we have to figure out, and I think we should be having some discussions in the future about more fair taxations, maybe relieve that burden from property tax and push it over to some sales tax or some other type of tax. But at the end of the day, Steve, I think people have an expectation of services from government. It's escalating. The price of government goes up. The price of public safety goes up. We try to keep government as small as it can be, but I'll be honest with you, in the world of public safety right now, there's an inflation going on. We have to pay our professional police officers and sheriff, our fire officials. We have to pay them more to get them into the industry, otherwise nobody wants to do that kind of work. So, and you, when you and I talked last time a few months ago, we had all kinds of staffing problems because we weren't able to keep up with private market, and the commission has taken some very tangible actions to correct that, but that drives the cost of everything up. So it's going to be, I think you'll see with our setting commission and the setting city council of Wichita, I think you're going to see a lot of discussion of this in the future.
So we're almost out of time, but what's the biggest challenge in your mind facing Sedgwick County government today?
Yeah, I think what we just talked about, Steve, I think this concept of how we're going to continue to pay for government as a community and how we're going to reconcile this property tax session, that's number one on our radar. Now, we got a gazillion projects going on, right? I mean, we've got to solve the admin building thing. We're revising and redoing our juvenile complex with the capital improvement program to make that more state-of-the-art. We're adding cameras into our jail. We've got a number of heavy-duty projects going on because I think people's expectation today is that government be efficient, that it be well-ran, and that it serves them when they need it in crunch time, which is a lot of what public safety entity and public services, mental health, et cetera. So we got a lot of balls in the air, but we have to figure out as a community how we're going to pay for it and better ways to work together between not only City of Wichita and Sedgwick County, but we have 20 cities in Sedgwick County. How can we all work together better, share resources, try to keep the costs as low as possible, and get away from this silo mentality that we've had in government since you and I were children, right? I mean, we've got to think of better ways to do business and take the burden off of homeowners and taxpayers and yet still provide a really good service out there to meet the needs of the community. That's the big challenge for not only probably this year, but probably for the next year as well. We'll be talking a lot about this.
Right. Tom, hey, thanks for being with us again. We appreciate it. Our guest is Sedgwick County Manager Tom Stoles. Again, thanks, Tom, for spending some time with us.
Thanks for inviting me, Steve. Appreciate the time.
That's all for this edition of Issues 2024. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening. I'm Steve McIntosh.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.